Well, Bin Laden is dead, and now many want to know how we found him, what this is going to mean for the future of national security. Joining us now with his insight is national security correspondent J.J. Green. J.J., good morning to you.
Good morning, Amy. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Tom?
Okay. How are you doing after being up all night covering this?
Well, you know, we've been rehearsing for this for years, folks who cover this beat. And I got to tell you, it did not play out the way I thought it would. I always thought it would be a different day of the week, and it certainly would be much earlier in the day. But a Sunday night at 10 o'clock and you get word that the president's going to speak pretty soon from the White House, it kind of puts everything into perspective, and you make the adjustments that you need. But this is indeed a huge development in more ways than one, not just for the U.S. national security community, but for al-Qaeda as well, and for the future of the war on terror, against terrorism. And the main question that folks are asking today was, how the heck did this happen?
Well, yeah.
And apparently what happened was back last year in July or early August or something like that, U.S. intelligence developed some information that suggested that they had some idea about the whereabouts of Bin Laden based on some patterns, and these patterns had to do with courier, and essentially this was the human intelligence source that gave them this information. So they then latched on to this courier, began to follow that person, and watch that person. What's interesting is that they determined that he was in a house, in a mansion, in a resort area of Pakistan, in a place called Abbottabad, which is a spa town.
Not in a cave.
No, not in a cave. It's in an opulent mansion.
And it's named for a former British general.
Yeah. Abbottabad, Abbott. And it's this house. There were so many red flags in the house, including the fact that there was no internet, no TV. They burned their own garbage. And those are red flags right there for the Pakistani intelligence. So the other question that's been coming up today is, how much did the intelligence in Pakistan know about this? And they've been curiously silent today, maybe just leaving this to the White House to talk about.
Because my understanding is that we, the U.S., did not negotiate with Pakistan or tell Pakistan or let them know that this was about to go down, that they kept that information to themselves. They didn't share that with their or am I wrong about that?
I am not positive about that, but I can certainly I've heard the same thing. And I don't know that that's inaccurate. I think you may be exactly right about that. And a part of the reason for that is Abbottabad is a town of wealthy people. And most of the people in that 81,000 population, many of the people that live in that area are retired generals, military people with military connections, and many people who may have connections to the ISI. And one of the lingering and long-term problems the U.S. has had in this search for Bin Laden is being ambushed. Essentially, from an intelligence point of view, by intelligence sources tipping Bin Laden and his people off. So this was something that they had to do, I suppose, to avoid leaks from within the Pakistani intelligence apparatus. We don't know for sure, but I haven't heard anything from them. I have reached out to them, and interestingly enough, they're very quiet today, the Pakistani government on this.
We're speaking with national security correspondent J.J. Green. I guess they're sort of – they can't win, really, because if they say, yeah, we knew about this the whole time and knew Bin Laden was there, then they were protecting him in a sense. If they say, great, we helped with this raid, then some of the other elements will see them as being on the wrong side.
They've got a real problem because the contractor from the CIA, Raymond Davis, that was arrested not too long ago – because of the double murder that he committed while he was in Pakistan, undercover, working as a CIA asset. was cut and dried. He had diplomatic immunity. They should have let him go. But what developed was it became a politicized situation. There are elements within the country that deal with the government, deal with the intelligence community, knew that it would put the government in a bad light if they were to make a political case out of it, forcing the government to at least put up the effort in front of the world to be difficult with the U.S. And the U.S. was fuming about this. And this this damaged the relationship between the Pakistanis, the intelligence services there, and the U.S. here. And this particular situation, the Davis situation, is another reason why I, you know, feel, just based on some of the folks that I've spoken to, the U.S. decided, well, you know, we can't really trust them, so we can't tell them about this.
Now, you are national security correspondent J.J. Green, and you're also author of the blog The Hunt for Osama Bin Laden.
Yeah, and, you know, interestingly enough, we've been doing this, as I mentioned to you, for five, going on 6 years, and, you know, this is something I rehearse for in the bathroom and in the car when I'm by myself jogging. What, you know, would come out on this particular day, but I did not think that he would be buried at sea. I did not think that it would be a scenario whereby he would be engaged and shot in the head. I did not think that there would be a situation where he'd be found, put it this way, in a place with so many other people. I did think that he was in a city. Based on the other people that I've spoken to, the sources, they've said all along they thought he might be in a city. But I just never thought, though, that it would be under these circumstances in this type of place. But I guess that's one of the parts of the genius of Al-Qaeda, is that that's what they do, is they sit around and think, okay, what should we do? What could we do to pretty much outsmart the people that are looking for us? And where might they think we would not be, and then go there and also what might they think we would not do, and then they would go and do that. And what I'm saying is they always try to
spy versus spy.
Yeah. Yeah. So does this mean the blog is going to be The Hunt for Al-Zawahiri?
Well, it's always been The Hunt for Osama Bin Laden and the War Against Terrorism. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the name change won't make a difference.
Because the war is not over.
No, and the war is, I'm not going to say just getting started, but I'm simply going to say that his death doesn't change anything, except the fact that he's dead.
Yeah.
He's no longer with us. That's all it changes. He's no longer here with us.
Well, doesn't it also say, though, that the United States in its magisterial power is still something to be reckoned with, even if you're a terrorist?
Well, there's no doubt about it. Just ask the Russians and just ask all the rest of the folks around the world who deal with the U.S. military and the U.S. Intelligence community on a daily basis. And let's be clear about this. This was a CIA operation because the Navy SEALs that engaged Bin Laden's compound were most likely from Bagram Air Base, and I've seen where they operate out of at the north end there, and they the military does not have permission to operate in Pakistan, so it had to be CIA, and the people that work out of there, as do wherever they work, are very, very, very good at what they do. Surgical is mm-hmm. what they are when it comes to these kinds of operations. And they probably were working out of Bagram, and they probably, you know, had a great deal of information to help them prepare for the mission.